The herd moved away from the plaza and stopped when the mammoth saw the human standing around the edge of the square. Those in the front ranks turned and collided with the others in the herd. The snorts and squeaks grew louder. There was a flicker of movement at the entrance to the street. The head thug stuck his head around the corner. The sight and smell of another unpleasant two-legged creature spooked the animals closest to him. In their eagerness to escape, they bumped against the other mammoths. The herd had reached critical mass. Emboldened at the lack of a challenge, the ivory hunters stepped into the open. Austin set off the chain reaction. He fired his gun in the air. Zavala had been waiting for the signal. He began firing, too. Schroeder and Carla yelled and clapped their hands. The herd was transformed in an instant from an uneasy group of placid animals to a full-blown stampede. Trumpeting in fear, the moving mass of heavy bodies and sharp tusks flowed toward the only avenue of escape, the narrow street that would lead them to safety outside the cave. Unfortunately, the killers stood between the rampaging herd of mammoths and their goal of freedom. The Russians raised their guns to fire at the crazed animals, but the herd was almost on top of them. They turned and ran. They only got a few steps before they were knocked to the ground and trampled underfoot by tons of mammoth flesh. Austin and the others took no chances that the herd would turn back. They continued to make as much racket as they could. It was all over in a few seconds. The plaza was empty. The rumble of the stampeding herd echoed in the distance. Austin and Zavala cautiously advanced along the street. Zavala looked down at the bloodied mounds of clothing that once had been men. They found a flashlight that had been undamaged by the stampede. Austin yelled at Schroeder and Carla that it was safe to come ahead. The hike back down to the shore took several hours. Austin's group arrived at the Kotelny's launch exhausted, but with the exception of Schroeder's twisted ankle and wounded face, essentially unscathed. Back aboard the Russian icebreaker, the members of the Ivory Island expedition ate a light meal and turned in for a well-earned rest. Austin was having a weird dream in which a procession of pygmy mammoths paraded along the streets of a crystal city to the tune of St. Louis Blues. His eyes snapped open. The mammoths in the city had vanished, but the blues were still playing. The music came from his phone. He dug the phone out of his pack and managed a fuzzy, "Austin." Trout's voice said, "Hey, Kurt, we've been trying to get you and Joe for days. Have you been down in a mine?"
"More like a cave," Austin said. "We found Carla Janus, and we're on a Russian icebreaker headed for the Siberian mainland. Glad to hear she's okay. She may be our only hope."
Austin was struck by the seriousness in Trout's voice. He sat up on the edge of the bunk.
"Our only hope for what, Paul?"
"Gamay and I found a copy of the Kovacs theorems in Los Alamos. I did a computer simulation based on the Kovacs stuff and existing material on polar reversal. The situation doesn't look good."
"I'm listening."
Austin was fully awake now. Trout paused.
"The simulation showed that the magnetic polar reversal is not as elastic as some people think. A shock that's strong enough to cause a magnetic polar reversal will trigger a geologic shift of the Earth's crust."
"Are you saying that a polar shift, once begun, is irreversible?"
"That's the way it looks."
"Is there any margin for error in the simulation?"
"It's so slim as to be negligible."
Austin felt as if a wall had fallen on him.
"We're talking about a catastrophe."
"Worse," Trout said. "This is a doomsday scenario. The worldwide destruction if this thing is unleashed is beyond anything that can be imagined or previously experienced."
"I may be able to offer a ray of hope," Austin said. "Before I left for Siberia, I talked to the guy who designed the pole reversal process. He's trying to stop the reversal plans and almost got murdered for his trouble. He says that there may be an antidote that will stop the shift even after it has started. Apparently, Kovacs came up with a set of frequencies. As Kovacs's granddaughter, Carla Janus may hold the key to this antidote, but she says she doesn't know anything about it."
"When will you get back to Washington?"
"It's night here. We'll make landfall tomorrow. We've got a plane waiting, but it will be at least 24 hours before I see you."
"That's a whole day lost."
"Can't be helped, my friend. Here's what I'd like you to do. Prepare a summary of your findings and possible options. I want evidence so Pitt and Sandecker can make a strong case to the president. I'll wrap up a report today.
Good.
I'll call when we're in the air to give you an ETA. I'll be standing by.